Welcome to ITB Berlin's Travel Hero podcast. I'm your host, Charlotte Lamp-Davies, with management consultancy A Bright Approach. Today, our travel hero is Shannon Stowell, CEO of the Adventure Travel Trade Association, also known as ATTA. A very warm welcome to you, Shannon.
Thank you so much, Charlotte. It's so lovely to be here.
We are delighted to have you with us today. And the topic of today's podcast is adventure travel. And I'm really looking forward to diving in here to discuss basically what constitutes adventure travel. And we'll also have a look at some of the trends and statistics in this area. Before we dive in, I'd really like for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, your role, and what brought you to the travel industry. So over to you, Shannon.
Thanks so much, Charlotte. So, you know, the road to the travel industry for me is probably like a lot of professionals in the travel industry, where it's a windy one. In my role as CEO, I oversee the association and all of the initiatives and side projects that we do that I'll talk a little bit more about later. So I've been doing this for about 20 years now, and took over from the gentleman who started the ATTA back in sometime in the 90s. And so in 2004, I left the role that I was in at another company and jumped into this full time and never looked back. But I think what got me into the travel industry was actually growing up in the mountains in Colorado and really loving being in the outdoors. And the way that we define adventure travel, and we've done this through a lot of consumer studies, is there are three elements to adventure travel: nature, culture, and activity. And so with those three as the pillars of what defines adventure travel, or the core of adventure travel, I grew up in a very adventurous location. So the nature part and the activity part was very easy to come by. And I was honestly enthralled with Jacques Cousteau. I thought I wanted to be an oceanographer. So I got a biology degree, ended up working in Alaska for a bit, ended up in a laboratory for 8 years, and realized I really was not a scientist when it came right down to it. At that point, I jumped into the e-commerce revolution back in 1997 and founded and launched an e-commerce company selling outdoor gear. And so I did that for 6 years. And then I met the ATTA and thought, wow, this is a very interesting group of people, and really just sort of got enamored with the idea of being involved with the experience side of adventure instead of the gear and product side. So I made the leap, and 20 years later, here we are.
Wonderful story. And oh my goodness, the memories I now have of Jacques Cousteau sitting literally cleaned to the television whenever he was on every week throughout my own childhood. Shannon, even from your introduction to yourself, and for those that know you already, you are a huge advocate for adventure travel. Maybe it'd be nice if you could share with us how adventure travel specifically benefits the local communities and environments, and maybe why is this such a powerful tool for responsible tourism?
Yeah, that's a great question, Charlotte. I think, you know, when it comes right down to it, it is a business, it's a part of the travel industry that is absolutely reliant on pristine environments with healthy wildlife and interesting local cultures and communities. And then at least some level of infrastructure, even if that infrastructure is just a trail or access to, you know, to a, let's say, a remote area via dirt road, trail, whatever it might be. I think really adventure travel relies on those things. And so the businesses in adventure travel naturally are inclined to protect and to try to preserve what they know is at the core of their business, not just from a, you know, a hard cold, this is good for my business standpoint. If you ever come to one of our events, I think the thing that I hear most from people that come to an ATTA event for the first time, full of our members, is they're overwhelmed with the passion in the room. And almost every one of those adventure travel businesses is driven by someone's personal passion. It might be rivers, like the company Oars here in the U.S. The founder, who sadly passed away a few years ago, but was an incredible advocate, He took people on rivers to save rivers. He took celebrities, politicians, and through his efforts and others, they were able to have some of the dams never be built that would have been built and had destroyed a lot of local ecosystems. You know, there's somebody that's really passionate about rafting. It could be marine life, so, you know, an operator in the Galapagos. It could be an operator in Rwanda who works with the local people on training them on how to be tour guides and work in the lodges and make a living from the gorilla tourism, for example. Gorillas, really, tourism is the only reason that the gorillas still exist, is that there is an economic value for the local community and for the international operators working with those communities to preserve it. You know, I think at the end of the day, the short answer is adventure travel doesn't exist without local communities and pristine environments. And so you've got this army of small and medium-sized operators around the world that are very active and passionate about protecting.
Yeah, I think you also mentioned, and I believe you've just returned from your annual summit, which this year was in Panama, correct?
Right.
Yeah, and I expect that sustainability and responsibility were key themes at your summit, as they are very much on the top of all the sort of industry conferences themes at the minute. But how do you see really your area, sort of adventure travel, leading the way in promoting these values? Because we need for them to remain at the forefront of all of our minds, don't we?
We do. And, you know, I can clearly remember a moment at one of our first summits. So going back to 05, 06, somewhere in there. And I remember we were talking about sustainability at much more of a primary level. And I remember multiple people from the travel industry then, so almost 20 years ago, saying, wow, I'd never really thought about sustainability before in travel. And then when I did a TEDx talk back in 2018 in Bend, Oregon, which I would say is a pretty progressive community, mountain and outdoor rec community here in the US. And the interesting thing was, because we had a mixer afterwards where the locals could, the attendees could mix with the speakers. And of course, that was really fun to talk with people. And what was surprising to me is how many of them said, you know, I look for fair trade products. I buy organic when I can afford it. It never crossed my mind that my vacation might have either some responsibility or sustainability opportunities around it. I just didn't think about that. And so I think, you know, there's this whole process where it's an education process, it's an inspiration process. And the way that I see the adventure travel sector leading the way, and yes, responsibility and sustainability are very strong themes at our summit. I would say if there's a difference, it is now a sense of absolute urgency. You know, when it comes to climate, when it comes to disappearing languages, disappearing species, you know, overrun environments, it's become an urgent matter. And so a couple of things that I see the industry doing. You know, first of all, as the association, we have to have our own house in order. So back in 2016, we launched an organization, a nonprofit called the Adventure Travel Conservation Fund. And so that's a specific effort from our community working on grassroots efforts around social and environmental issues in adventure travel. And then about 4 years ago, we launched Tomorrow's Air, which is our climate action. And we took another step, Charlotte. We made a decision that with some of the concern around greenwashing, not only in the travel industry, but beyond, we felt like we as the adventure travel community want to be very, very clear and also be very united. And so we launched a sustainability resource center and a sustainability commitment for our members that we just announced this in Panama. Our goal is within the next 2 years to have 100% of ATTA's business members have a formal sustainability policy and plan. We're not saying you must do it through XYZ organization because we have members all over the globe. Their needs are wildly different. Small companies, big companies, there's just such a variety. But we want everyone to be able to say, here's what I'm doing. I'm now Travel Life certified or Green Key certified, or I'm doing 1% for the planet, or I've become a B Corp, or whatever it might be. And you know, we're going to work with companies. I wouldn't say it's a brick wall, like you can't come in. Anybody can come and join, but then we want to see the sustainability commitment and journey starting to happen if a company does not have that. And so we have a sustainability resource center to make it easier for those companies. A lot of the resources are for free. The other interesting thing is we did a questionnaire of our members recently and asked them, what are you doing about climate at this point? And a full half said, we're reducing emissions by purchasing from more sustainable suppliers. Some said, we disseminate climate conscious travel education. We're reducing emissions by conserving water. We're sustainably sourcing our food, et cetera, et cetera. So we know that it's an issue that is top of mind for the space.
Absolutely. And I think, yeah, no brick wall has ever really helped improve situations. But what I am hearing is that you are holding your members accountable. And there are many, many ways of doing that. And as you say, this will vary from offering to offering and from member to member. But that is certainly what I hear you are saying here.
And I want to say one more thing about that, because you pointed out something that I feel very strongly about, this brick wall concept. We also don't blame and shame. You know, we really feel like nobody changes their behavior by being made fun of and by being shamed. The only real path is to woo people and make the case and make it make sense wherever possible to say, we have the resources to help you. Everybody's on their journey. Nobody's doing it perfectly. ATTA doesn't do it perfectly. We did join 1% for the planet 2 years ago, and we're continuing that. And we're looking into B Corp, whether we can become one as well. And I believe we can and will. We're on our own path, and everybody's on a path. You know, you look at big cruise, which obviously takes a lot of punches for sustainability issues. And then you look at somebody like Hurtigruten, who is doing amazing things, fjord to table food, you know, working to eliminate invasive species, like there's a sea urchin that they're specifically able to harvest out of the ocean, which is invasive. And then they're serving that to their guests. Here's a big ship company that is working on doing things right. We're all on this path together.
I think this is definitely food for thought, and naming and shaming, as you rightly say, has never got us anywhere. I was hoping that when we spoke recently, we talked a little bit about sort of trends in adventure travel, just because there's so much to get through, Shannon. So I wonder if we could maybe sort of turn to that, and you could highlight for us sort of what are currently, would you say, shaping the industry, and how does, again, this align with the growing focus on sustainability?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, some of the observations that I'll share came directly from an incredible speaker at our summit, Al Mershon. He spoke in Panama, and really, it was a trend session that was like drinking from a fire hose. It was rapid fire, many, many different trends and predictions. But I picked out a few, and then there's some that we've observed as well on our own. One of those is the middle market has softened a little bit. And the high end is growing rapidly. And there's all sorts of speculation on why. I mean, I think one thing is that the, you know, revenge travel and the, you know, the pent up demand has from COVID has finally sort of worked itself through the system for the most part. And so that could be part of it. Artificial intelligence. This was a huge subject at our last two summits. And two summits ago, there were a bunch of media who gathered together on their own at the summit that we had in Hokkaido, Japan, and at the moment session to talk about the dangers, because they were feeling like they work so hard and get paid so little to put out quality content, and then it just gets scraped and incorporated into the AI blob of information. And so, you know, that's on one side of the scale where we're seeing some impacts in the industry that are concerning. And then on the other side, there's a lot of organizations, including us, ATTA, where we're incorporating AI into our sites to reduce lack of information, to increase efficiency of getting information to people for customer service. There's a website, I can't remember the exact name of it. It's like, will AI take your job? If you Google that, you'll find it eventually. And tour guides, if you put tour guides into that program, it says they're at moderate risk, which I think should scare the mediocre tour guides who are not connecting with their customers, who are not excited about what they do anymore, or maybe never were. But I think super guides are going to, they're always going to be in high demand. So AI is definitely going to impact us, but not destroy.
Same with the travel agents. The high impact ones are always going to be in demand. We have seen that, you know, 20 years ago, we were told that the days of the travel agents were all over, but far, far from it, actually, particularly those that really, really know what they're doing and are just offering something very additional. Adventure travel, of course, involves, by its nature of what it is, often very close interaction with local cultures and communities. It's one of the things that I personally love when I travel. You no doubt will have some examples of destinations sort of where adventure travel has really made a positive impact on both the people and the place. Well, at least I expect you might have some stories there.
So many stories. So many. It was hard to pick, but I decided to pick Panama since we just came from there and fresh on the palate. But basically, Panama, we've been working with them on about a five-year journey, which is really the way that we love working with destinations now, is to come in and say, you know, what is the current state of the small tour operator and guiding community? Where could it go? Where does it need strengthening? Because and everywhere in the world, no exceptions, no matter how advanced the industry is, there's always room for improvement, whether it's safety and risk management or sustainability. For the last 5 years, we've been working with Panama on a really crawl, walk, run and strategy. And having the summit there last week was, you know, the point of run. And so one of the things that we've done is a lot of education with guides. We do both in-person and online education. And that's been going on for a few years now, where we have the ability to come in and sort of assess where the guides and companies are at and what is needed, because we've done this long enough. And so training, education, and then we were part of a very interesting, I would say, kind of an experiment last year, where Panama brought in a representative from the UNWTO, invited ATTA and the CEO of Tourism Cares. So the three of us organizations, we were judges in a contest. Now, this contest was 25 Panamanian DMCs and operators were charged with working with local communities to create unique tourism products that would be good for that community and would protect the wildlife and the environment. And so we had the extreme pleasure of hearing 25 tour operator community pitches from stage saying, here's what we've created. This one's with dolphins. This one's with the Naso people that still have their own king in Panama. And basically, all these experiences were put forth in front of us, and we judged them on a set of criteria. And then there were benefits to the whole community, every one of those company and community groups afterwards. It was fascinating to see a kaleidoscope of amazing experiences that are now export ready. And so, yeah, the timing was really for this summit, the buyers and media from all around the world to come to this summit and see those firsthand. We put buyers and media on pre-summit adventures, and they went all around the country, those 3 and 4 day adventures, to see many of these community-based products. Oh, it was so fun, the passion in the room. And what was really amazing, Charlotte, is when the group that ended up winning the grand prize won, all the other communities, there was no evident jealousy. They jumped up, clapped, roared, screamed. You could just really feel the sense that they were there for each other.
I wonder how you envision the future of adventure travel. I mean, we've touched on quite a few things, high-end, mid-end, and all of that. And there's a lot of affluent travelers who really can spend a lot of money on seeing and doing what they've always dreamt of doing. But I'm wondering how you feel that it will evolve sort of in terms of, and this is a big question, Shannon, but if anybody can answer it, I think it's you, in terms of sort of sustainability, technology, and maybe again back to the traveler expectations. I mean, what do you see ahead of us?
The technology will continue to play a really important role when it comes to AI and other sorts of technologies. I do think, and we do say this often, I think adventure travel is also a bit of an antidote to technology, because we have so much in our lives, especially with the Instagrams and TikToks and all of this that is available everywhere all the time. Oh, total overload. And part of the magic of adventure travel is escaping that. So one operator, I'll just give an example. Jamtara Lodge in India has done this really interesting strategy where you can get internet while you're there in this jungle, this gorgeous five-star jungle lodge, but it's in a single room with uncomfortable chairs and white walls. It's not usable out in the rooms, out in the dining area, so that people connect with each other and with nature. So I think one of the things that we see for the future of adventure travel is continued small groups that became even more important during and after COVID. Custom itineraries. You know, there's this concept of dim sum. Travel is dim sum now, where somebody may not be as inclined to go on a 15-day cycling trip, but they want to go on a trip that involves some cycling, some yoga, some culinary adventures, some wildlife watching, bird watching. So this customization and dim sumization, soft adventures, and I think this probably has to do with that really strong increase in high-end adventure. So more soft adventures. Trails. People love trails. The Jordan Trail, you know, the Continental Divide Trail, the Via Dinerica. People love trails. And so remote destinations and trails are going to be a big deal. I think that sustainability, you know, the truth, Charlotte, and I'm sure you've seen this in other studies, people say increasingly they want sustainable choices, but often they're not taking actions to do that. They just assume that the tour operator is doing it right. That, I think, will continue to be a challenge for the future, where if the customer's not asking and really understanding, then there's a chance that the trip they're taking is maybe not very focused on sustainability or responsibility. I think it always is great to ask. As far as it, trending destinations, you know, the Mediterranean came up really high in our last survey, Western Europe, Scandinavia. And Scandinavia, what's the term for it? Coldcations or coolcations, where people are wanting to go to places that are not so brutally hot in July and August. And so they're seeing a real uptick there. And then, of course, there's, you know, we've seen within our own community places like Japan, Colombia, these have really popped up as very popular. A lot of press, a lot of information.
Yes, I was literally just going over, you know, some of those last things you said in terms of destinations. And if I haven't got them all on my list already, I will need to add them all to my list. But very gently, what I like about ATTA, of course, is that you initiate the conversation around these issues again and again and again. And thereby, you know, maybe we can get people to ask more questions of the travel providers. Are you doing this? Are you making responsible observations and decisions with your businesses? Because as you say, there's nothing wrong with asking. This is how we actually educate ourselves and make the right choices. We are very sadly coming to the end of this. We might have you back next year live at ITB Berlin. We'll see how we go with that. But I know you yourself, of course, love to travel. Maybe as we wrap up, why don't you tell us where and what you would like to do next on a holiday?
Well, I'm actually leaving next Saturday for Norway, and Norway is one of my favorite places to go. But it's for a serious reason. We're putting on a climate innovation summit for travel, for the travel industry. So it goes beyond the adventure industry, and so I'm really excited to go there and learn a lot more from the experts that are going to be coming in and speaking. And then on a fun level, I'm pondering a trip to Iraq. It's a place I've gone twice, into northern Iraq with one of our members, but I've never been to southern Iraq. So that one is definitely more of a, I mean, there's always a little bit of business involved because we think about how to make these opportunities better for the companies and the destinations. But that one will also just be really fun with a group of amazing people who are motivated by mission on how do we make travel better.
Wonderful. I love both of them. And when you fly to Norway and you pass over Denmark, my native Denmark, you can give that a wave. And I can highly recommend a visit to Denmark as well. Wonderful. Wonderful, Shannon. We are really pretty much out of time. So thank you again for joining us. It has been an absolute pleasure having you as our travel hero today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charlotte. I really appreciate you having me on. And anytime I can be of service, you let me know.
For sure. I am sure we will circle back round, and adventure travel is definitely going to be featured at the ITB Berlin convention next year in March. So thanks again, Shannon, for joining us today. Thanks also, of course, to our audience for listening. You can find many more Travel Hero podcasts on ITB's website. So join us soon again, and safe travels.